You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on the Dhammapada. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Notes on the Dhammapada, translated and edited by Eknath Eswaran. The Dhammapada. Eknath Eswaran, the brilliant translator and editor of this translation of the Dhammapada, along with my favorite translation of the Bhagavad Gita, you can see the notes on that, says that if all the sutras had been lost but the Dhammapada, it alone would be sufficient for us to grasp the essence of Buddhism. And with this note, we'll take a super quick look at Buddhism. In the book, Eswaran covers the Four Noble Truths, Dharma, Karma, Nirvana, and a few other big ideas. And then we'll jump into some of my favorite big ideas. If you haven't read or studied Buddhism, and especially perhaps if you have, this book is incredible. Eswaran has a remarkably warm style that reflects the spirit of a man who walked with Gandhi back in the day in his native India, before he headed to Berkeley, where Eswaran started one of the early Western meditation centers. So let's jump in. We'll start with a quick introduction to the Buddha. Buddha was born Siddhartha Gautama in the 6th century BCE, the son of a royal family in Nepal. He walked away from his riches and life of comfort at the age of 30, seeking spiritual fulfillment through a path of contemplation and asceticism before achieving enlightenment while sitting beneath the Bodhi tree. The Buddha's teachings of the Four Noble Truths form the core of Buddhism, a religion practiced by hundreds of millions of people around the world. The word Buddha is derived from the Sanskrit word that means to wake up. Thus, the Buddha is one who is awake and truly alive moment to moment. How about this? Did you know that Buddha taught in India at roughly the same time, 6th century BCE, that Confucius and Lao Tzu of Taoism taught in China? I always think that's cool. Okay, so the Dhammapada. The Dhammapada is one of the core books of Buddha's teachings. According to Eswaran, Dhammapada means something like the path of Dharma, of truth, of righteousness, of the central law that all of life is one. Eswaran continues, quote, "The Buddha did not leave a static structure of his belief that we can affirm and be done with. His teaching is an ongoing path, a way of perfection, which anyone can follow to the highest good. The Dhammapada is a map for this journey. These verses can be read and appreciated simply as wise philosophy. As such, they are part of the great literature of the world. But for those who would follow it to the end, the Dhammapada is a sure guide to nothing less than the highest goal life can offer, self-realization." How about the Four Noble Truths? Buddha's Four Noble Truths, as I mentioned, form the core of Buddhism. They are, number one, life is full of suffering. Number two, the cause of suffering is selfish desire. Number three, suffering can be relieved. Number four, the relief of suffering can be achieved by following the Eightfold Path. Let's start with life is suffering. What does that mean? So the Buddha established the fact that life will always involve a certain amount of suffering. We will all get old, get sick, and die. Our possessions will break, and so will some of our relationships. According to Buddha, that's just how it is. The fact that these things happen do not account for why we are unhappy, however. We are unhappy because we fight against it. We cling to our sense of how things should be. You can see on the website the big idea on dukkha, which means to get stuck. We get attached to how we want things to be. It is this attachment to expectations that presents the problem. Only by dealing with the fact that life is unpredictable and often will bring pain and undesirable events can we become non-attached and avoid the suffering that plagues most people. How about nirvana and the idea of the bodhisattva? The literal Sanskrit root of the word nirvana means a blowing out or extinction. In Buddhism, nirvana represents the highest state of consciousness, in which all selfish desires and attachments are no longer present. The point beyond nirvana that I always thought was cool, the idea of a bodhisattva, one who reaches his or her own enlightenment, and chooses to return to the world in service to all sentient beings, committed to resting when all beings are happy and free. I love that. All right, and how about the Eightfold Path? Then we will jump into specific big ideas. According to Buddhism, the key to ending suffering and achieving nirvana is to follow the Eightfold Path: right views, right resolve, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. That was a very quick introduction to Buddhism. For more, Google it, go to your local Buddhist center, talk to some Buddhist friends, whatever you need to do. But for now, we are going to jump into the big ideas. We'll start with, what are you thinking? Quote, our life is shaped by our mind. We become what we think. So those are literally the first words of the entire book. Our life is shaped by our mind. We become what we think. That's awesome. Begs the question, what are you thinking? And is that what you want your life shaped by? Pay attention, because the Buddha spoke those words quite literally. Your life is shaped by your thoughts. In fact, the book is basically all about purifying our thoughts and training our mind to live without cravings, attachment, and hatred, so we can open ourselves to love, courage, and service. Fun. All right, how about this? Armies in your mind. Quote, more than those who hate you, more than all your enemies, an undisciplined mind does greater harm. How true is that? So how's your internal dialogue? Are you even aware of just how much you criticize yourself? It's pretty crazy when we really start to notice what's going on up there in our minds. Of course, as you know, if you've spent any time trying, training our minds is an incredible challenge. Gandhi once remarked that this training requires the patience of someone trying to empty the sea with a teacup. I say it's time to get to work, and I raise my teacup to you in a toast to our training. So quick note here, my top practice for this by far is meditation, which of course Buddhism and Hinduism recommend strongly. So are you meditating? I'll tell you, my life took a quantum leap for the better when I started meditating an hour. I started with a half an hour every morning first thing. Pick your favorite style, but I strongly recommend you get in the habit of spending some time in stillness, in silence, connecting to your highest self, connecting to the divine within you that you just don't find in the normal hustle and bustle of life. So take the time. Get into meditation. Pick your favorite practice, but start your practice soon. Pretty please. The Buddha says here, if you forget the joy of life and get caught in the pleasures of the world, you will come to envy those who put meditation first. All right, here's the next big idea. How do you smell? Like a lovely flower full of color, but lacking in fragrance, are the words of those who do not practice what they teach. I love that. Are you like a beautiful flower that you approach to smell and discover it's all looks and no scent? We're all like that at times, huh? But let's listen to the big B, that would be Buddha, and live our truths. It's always cool to smell nice. And here's some more Buddha mojo on the subject of smelling good. He says, Dharma is not upheld by talking about it. Dharma is upheld by living in harmony with it. And he says, do not give your attention to what others do or fail to do. Give it to what you do or fail to do. Here's another great big idea. Walk alone if you must. Quote, if you find no one to support you on the spiritual path, walk alone. There is no companionship with the immature. This is another theme echoed again and again and again by all the greats. Couple of my favorite thoughts. Rumi says, stay with friends who support you in these. Talk with them about sacred texts and how you are doing and how they are doing, and keep your practices together. Seneca says, retire into yourself as much as possible. Associate with people who are likely to improve you. Welcome those whom you are capable of improving. The process is a mutual one. People learn as they teach. And perhaps my favorite, Jim Rohn, who was Tony Robbins' chief mentor back in the day. He says, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Think about that. You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And then do the math on who you're hanging out with. If they're more dialed in and inspiring and all that good stuff than you, sweet, you're averaging up. Then just think about how you can live up to that potential and inspire them as well. And if they're less inspiring or turned on to life than you, watch out. You're averaging down. If it's a mix, you're really not going anywhere. Your average is staying the same. The tip is average up. This is a big practice for me, and I like to say that one of my best friends is God. I like having her help my average. Straight up. All right, next big idea is how's the irrigation? Quote, as irrigators lead water where they want, as archers make their arrows straight, as carpenters carve wood, the wise shape their minds. Wow. And you, how's the irrigation in your life? Are you shaping your mind? The next big idea is solid as a rock. As a solid rock cannot be moved by the wind, the wise are not shaken by praise or blame. I love this one. It reminds me of Deepak and Don Miguel Ruiz and the idea of emptiness and Rorschach blobs all at once. Might kind of work like that. So first, Deepak. One of the coolest mantras I've ever learned is, quote, I am totally independent of the good or bad opinion of others. I've said that thousands and thousands of times. It's totally transformed my consciousness. Try it if you find yourself too easily swayed by the compliments or criticisms of those in your life. How about Don Miguel Ruiz? Have you read his brilliant Four Agreements? Check out my notes on those. His second agreement is, quote, don't take anything personally. Nothing others do is because of you. What others say and do is a projection of their own reality, their own dream. When you are immune to the opinion of others, you won't be the victim of needless suffering. And finally, how about emptiness and blobs? Know this, someone's opinion of you says a lot more about them than about you. Here's another concept in Buddhism. This isn't in the Dhammapada, but it's definitely relevant here. It's the idea of emptiness. The world is empty of meaning except that which we give it. It's kind of like a Rorschach test. You know, those psychology tests where you look at an ink blob and you tell the therapist what you see. Well, what you see has nothing to do with the blob and everything to do with you. It's the same thing here. How someone sees you has to do with them, not you. The same goes for how anyone sees anything. Rain can make some people dance naked with joy and others curse the terrible weather. It is all empty. You get to pick the meaning. So the next time someone gets pissy with you or critical of you or whatever, just remember they're telling you more about their issues than yours. And be like a rock, not shaken by either praise or blame. The Buddha also says, it is easy to see the faults of others. It is hard to see our own. All right, the next big idea is self-mastery. Quote, one who conquers himself is greater than another who conquers 1,000 times 1,000 men on the battlefield. Again, this is echoed by all kinds of great teachers. How about Jesus? He says, he who rules his spirit has won a greater victory than the taking of a city. Rumi says, the lion who breaks the enemy's ranks is a minor hero compared to the lion who overcomes himself. Da Vinci says, one can have no smaller or greater mastery than mastery of oneself. All right, so self-mastery is important. How do we achieve it? That's the next big idea, little by little. Quote, little by little a person becomes evil, as a water pot is filled by drops of water. Little by little a person becomes good, as a water pot is filled by drops of water. I love that. Seriously, we all want everything so fast, including self-mastery, which is kind of funny when you really think about it. So anytime I find myself wanting, expecting something to happen on my timeline, which is usually about 10 times faster than God's timeline, I reread this brilliant line from Epictetus. He says, no great thing is created suddenly, any more than a bunch of grapes or a fig. If you tell me that you desire a fig, I answer you that there must be time. Let it first blossom, then bear fruit, then ripen. I can also hear the voice of my Vipassana meditation teacher, S.N. Guenka, in my head. During my silent 10-day meditation, which was 10 hours a day of meditation for 10 days, pure silence, no phones, no computer, no journal, no books, no talking, no eye contact, no nothing other than meditation. You, your meditation cushions, and silence. And Guenka's rhythmic Burmese voice. If you've done it, you know what I'm talking about. So Guenka said this dozens and dozens of times. He'd say, work diligently, diligently. And I'm not doing his accent justice, but work patiently and persistently. Patiently and persistently. And you're bound to be successful. Bound to be successful. He'd say it so slowly, it would take about 10 minutes to say it all. But work diligently, diligently. Work patiently and persistently. Patiently and persistently. And you're bound to be successful. Bound to be successful. About the 78th time I heard it, roughly, I got it. And it's become a defining mantra in my life. I know that if I work diligently, patiently, and persistently, I can do anything. I'm bound to be successful. And one more little bit, because I think it's so important. Have you heard the story of the stonecutter? It goes like this. A stonecutter hits a rock with a hammer. The stone splits. Now, the casual observer who just happened to be walking by sees this and thinks, wow, that guy's really strong. I can't believe he broke that huge rock with a single blow. Now, the reality, obviously, is that the stonecutter didn't break it in a single blow. He'd been hammering away at that rock for a long time. Many, many blows went into that rock before it finally split. Most people see someone who has achieved some level of success, whether it's enlightenment or celebrity status or financial wealth or whatever, and think, wow, they sure must be lucky. Obviously, the stonecutter isn't strong enough to break a rock in one blow. And no one is lucky enough to reach any level of excellence and success without an equally diligent and consistent effort. So hit the rock again and again and again. You will break the rock. Oh, and by the way, quick FYI, once you're done with that rock, get ready to start swinging at the next one. Remember, little by little, a person becomes good, as a water pot is filled by drops of water. And the Buddha also says, make your mind pure as a silversmith blows away the impurities of silver, little by little, instant by instant. Beautiful. So the last big idea here, just do it, Buddha style. Buddha says, quote, if anything is worth doing, do it with all your heart. Well, that makes it pretty simple, huh? If it's worth doing, it's a very important distinction. Do it with all your heart. Equally important distinction. So decide what's worth doing. Seriously, are you doing stuff that you shouldn't even be doing? Because that's the stuff you tend to do half-ass. The best solution? Stop doing it. Either immediately or make a plan to stop doing it. But once you've decided to do it, give all your heart to it. All right, so that's a quick look at the Dhammapada. Now let's take a quick look at the editor and translator, Eknath Eswaran. Then we will explore some of the big ideas from the sidebar of the printed note. For now, Eknath Eswaran. He was born in 1910 and died in 1999. Was born in a village in Kerala, India. He served as a professor of English literature at the University of Nagpur and was a Fulbright scholar at the University of California, Berkeley. His translations of the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, and the Dhammapada are critically acclaimed. His best-selling book is called Meditation, a simple 8-point program for translating spiritual values into daily life. He was deeply influenced by Gandhi, who he met when he was a young man. That's from Wikipedia, where you can learn more. And if you liked this note, you'll probably like the notes on the Bhagavad Gita, Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, and Man's Search for Meaning, and pretty much all the other books on there. All right, so how about some quotes? Now is the time to wake up when you are young and strong. That's the Buddha. All these will be from the Buddha. Don't waste a moment, for wasted moments send you on the downward course. Do not do evil, and suffering will not come. Everyone has the choice to be pure or impure. No one can purify another. Any indiscipline brings evil in its wake. There is no impurity greater than ignorance. Light the lamp within. Strive hard to attain wisdom. When you are living in darkness, why don't you look for the light? Driven by fear, people run for security to mountains and forests, to sacred spots and shrines. But none of these can be a safe refuge, because they cannot free the mind from fear. If you have no wound on your hand, you can touch poison without being harmed. No harm comes to him who does not harm. If you harm a pure and innocent person, you harm yourself, as dust thrown against the wind comes back to the thrower. Avoid the company of the immature if you want joy. All is change in the world, but the disciples of the Buddha are never shaken. If you forget the joy of life and get caught in the pleasures of the world, you will come to envy those who put meditation first. The wise are disciplined in body, speech, and mind. They are well controlled indeed. They are not wise whose thoughts are not steady and minds not serene, who do not know Dharma, the law of life. They are wise whose thoughts are steady and minds serene, unaffected by good and bad. They are awake and free from fear. Go beyond both pleasure and pain. And finally, earnest among those who are indolent, awake among those who slumber. The wise advance like a racehorse, leaving others behind. The earnest are always respected, the indolent, never. Well, there you go. There's a quick look at one of my favorite books, The Dhammapada. Hope you enjoyed, and trust you're doing great. Look forward to sharing more of these with you. And as always, have a great day. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to www.philosophersnotes.com to download more.